It's a beautiful day and a fine time for healing. Podcast host Randy Fine, a narcissistic abuse expert and the author of the groundbreaking book Close Encounters of the Worst Kind and the captivating memoir Cliff Edge Road, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being are all that matter. So put your feet up, relax, and enjoy today's show. And now, here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I'm your show host, Randy Fine. Today, we're going to be talking about having empathic sensitivity, which I know many of you do have. And if you don't, you may not know what it is, and you're going to learn what that is today. Empaths feel deeply tuned into the feelings of others to the extent that they sometimes have a hard time distinguishing their emotions from others. If so, when they do that, they may be a highly sensitive person or an empath, which there is really a difference between the two, and we're going to learn what that is today. Empaths often describe feeling like a sponge that soaks up the emotions of others. Today's special guest, Signe, an ordained spiritual counselor, certified integrated therapeutic alignment practitioner, and author of the recently published book, The Space in Between, An Empath's Field Guide, will share how to tell if you are an empath or a highly sensitive person and how establishing boundaries can help both. Splitting her time between Colorado and Norway, Signe Myers-Hoven is an ordained spiritual counselor, an energy medicine practitioner, and author, and she teaches highly sensitive people practical exercises to successfully be vulnerable, at peace in their bodies, connect to nature, and feel safe with others. She's lived on five continents, raised 4 children, pets, and has a soft spot for playing squash and golf, and she's a very good listener. Let's bring Signe on and we'll get started. Good morning, Signe.
Hello?
Yes, Signe. Can you hear me? Oh, do
yeah,
I have the wrong...
Yeah, my name is Lisa.
Oh, I have the wrong person. I'm sorry. I'm going to put you back on hold. My error. I'm sorry. Good morning, Signe. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Randy.
Oh, you're so welcome. Okay, so my biggest question is the one that has to do with the title of your book. Why did you call your book The Space in Between? how does that have to do with empaths?
Yeah, it's a very important part of the book and also about the mechanics of being an empath is that when you can fully embody your empathic nature, you really are kind of straddling between the energetic realm and the physical realm. And, it's this ability to feel something energetically and yet understand its relationship to the physical. And so, the more clarity you have about your abilities to receive information energetically, you kind of learn to toggle in this space in between. And so that's also where the heart chakra kind of creates this this keystone between your upper chakras and your lower chakras. And, we process our life through our heart. And that's also the space in between the spiritual and the physical.
Okay, so the upper chakras versus the lower chakras. The lower chakras would be, where we, our solar plexus and our root chakra. And our sacral chakra, right. Versus the throat chakra and the third eye
and the
sixth chakra. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the head chakra. So the difference between the two, why is one more empathic or one more intuitive than the other?
Well, I wouldn't say anyone is more or less than the other. They all have their function and they all work holistically together. But if one is a little bit out, it does impact the whole thing because, you know, we're an interdependent system where, you know, everything is connected. And so this is why when one's working on healing limited perceptions or, you know, generational programming or any belief system that is limiting yourself, it's important to kind of go in and look where this energy blocking. And so your lower three chakras kind of represent the physical realm. And so, you know, it's like the root chakra is where our family and our clan and our kind of beliefs of belonging to, you know, a group and what, you know, what is safety, what is abundance, what are our perceptions on that, and also how do we ground into the earth. And so we also then have our second chakra, which is a lot of where the emotional subtle body is kind of tied into, and it relates to creativity, procreation, and there's a lot of noise on the line. Do you hear that, or is it just me?
No, I don't hear it.
I'll just continue. And so,
okay.
And then we go, and you know, your second chakra is more about one-on-one relationships. So we've gone from the root chakra, which is more about group and group family consciousness, to the second chakra, which is about more your one-on-one relationships and intimacy, and then you move up to the solar plexus, and then you've come up to the individual, where self-esteem and, you know, perception of self. So, you know, you've kind of climbed up from group to one-on-one to individual, and your life experiences you know, are kind of processed through these three lower chakras. How do you feel about yourself? How is your inner dialogue? What is your mental subtle body like? Because it's kind of tied into your solar plexus. So, you know, an emotional, you know, you were talking earlier about how you, you know, you help a lot of people that have been, you know, through emotional toxicity or abuse. And, you know, how do you clean up that area of your life? And when you move to the higher chakras, they're more kind of what I would like to call theoretical. You know, in science, there's the theoretical, and then there's the applied sciences. So I kind of like to say that the top chakras are where our theory is, and if we can put it into application in our life, in our relationships, in our perceptions, you know, that is when we've taken the spiritual principles and down through the heart and into our life, and we can express it, because the physical world is all about expression. Everything that's in the physical world can be named, and it's an expression. And the definition for create is actually to call into being. So we're calling into being our life. And so that you can see there, just using that language, you can see how important the throat chakra is then. You know, so how do you speak? Again, it's about your beliefs and your perceptions. You know, how do you speak about yourself? You know, is there a disparity between what you're thinking and how you're acting? You know, so there's a lot there, but I hope I've kind of distinguished for you the difference between the lower chakras are really here to show you how you are applying the tenets of love and charity and forgiveness and, you know, all these things that are can be quite theoretical.
Yes, I think you explained it very well. Thank you. So you say that no one is born an empath, that we might be born sensitive and empathic, but no one is born an empath, that we evolve into that. So can you explain that?
Yeah. You know, I think in today's world there is, you know, being an empath or naming yourself an empath, there seems to be a kind of a buzz around it. And without a lot of understanding what that means. And so for me, if someone is declaring that they are an empath, It means that they really have an awareness about their empathic sensitivities. They have really good boundaries. They can be open and available without, you know, being compromised or giving in detriment to themselves. So a lot of life for a sensitive person is learning to navigate this path of, you know, empathic sensitivity, how to understand when you're picking up something that doesn't originate from you. Because, you know, when we, if you pick something up energetically, it has an origin. And, you know, I think the first thing for, you know, what I like to tell people who are empathically sensitive is that not everything you feel is yours. You know, I think, unfortunately, we're born into societies that don't give a lot of framework or understanding about sensitivities or the energetic component to our physical life and like mental thoughts or emotions. And beginning to understand what does originate from you, like what are your own thoughts, what are your own feelings, gives you the baseline that you can then start to say, well, you know what, it's not reasonable for me to have this thought, this isn't mine, or my mood's just changed suddenly, you know, this doesn't necessarily represent what the way I truly feel, so I must be getting something from someone else. So I really do say, too, that, you know, when you're an empath, you have that ability and the discernment and the spiritual maturity to know if you're going to step over the line of being passively receiving information to actively engaging it. And so that's kind of my kind of declaration of why I feel strongly that no one is born an empath. You're born sensitive. You're born with empathic, intuitive channels. But it's up to you to learn how to embody it and how to let it be part of your authentic self. So I hope that clarifies a bit there.
Yeah, I mean, it's very different than what I thought of an empath, because I thought an empath had those sensitivities, but did not necessarily, that it was something, a skill that they, or a gift, basically, that they had to hone. That so you're saying that we don't really take on the label of empath or call ourselves an empath until we've developed the boundaries and learned how to work with it. Is that what you're saying? Am I correct?
Yes, because, you know, and the reason I say this is that, you know, energy speaks and energy listens. And if you're telling the environment that you're an empath, you know, and for me, you know, a definition of an empath is someone who senses balance or imbalance and can help balance an atmosphere, can, you know, do it in a way that's not creating hardship for themselves and overstepping boundaries. And so I think it's important to realize that when you identify yourself as an empath prematurely, you're nonetheless telling the environment that you're in service, because, you know, from my perception, an empath is someone who is offering themselves in service and to the space, to the environment, to the earth, in helping to balance energies. And so if you are saying you're an empath and you're working under that label, then the environment is likewise going to say, okay, well, let's present ourselves what needs to be balanced. And if you don't have the tools, if you don't have your own knowingness about your skills and abilities, then the environment is going to seem very chaotic and overwhelming. And this is what I hear, you know, you read forums or you see people post on Facebook, and, you know, I have a Facebook ad that's out there talking about, you know, an empath is just empathic sensitivities is just the ability to communicate to nature and yourself and others in a larger conversation. And it's neither a gift nor a curse. And so many people, that was a very polarizing statement. And so I had a lot of people saying, of course it's a gift, it's a superpower, it's this, it's that. And then I had other people said, you know, oh, it's a curse, it's overwhelming, I can't even go anywhere, I can't, you know. So when your sensitivities are when you have the perception that your sensitivities are victimizing you, then you really haven't tuned into how to take control. You haven't embodied yourself. You haven't cleared up, you know, the perceptions and the healing that you really need to do, because it isn't ultimately your sensitivities are a guidance, and it's an invitation to come home into yourself, into your own body, into your own skin, so that you feel comfortable no matter where you are.
Okay, thank you. That helps to sort of explain the difference. So if we are highly sensitive, but we have not learned or, you know, used the skills to, if we haven't sort of honed the skills and learned how to use them in the best way for us, then that's when we're considered highly sensitive?
Not exactly. I mean, there is an overlap. Is an overlap. Dr. Eileen Aron, you know, she termed the phrase highly sensitive person, I think, back in 1988. And when, you know, this became a legitimate field of study, when it became researched and, you know, they understood that there's now this genetic marker that 15 to 20% of the population have that helps them to be highly sensitive in how they process their environmental stimuli. This is kind of, for me, a mark in that, you know, everyone who was sensitive, you know, tried to climb under that umbrella and say, okay, well, this explains me. Yes, I have advocacy. I have counseling that's available for me. But what I found and why I felt the time for writing my book was now is the highly sensitive label did not address empathic sensitivities in the sense that for empathic sensitive people who pick up intuitively other people's thoughts and emotions or stuff in the environment, you know, it didn't address that really. And so I said, well, you know, now is the time to kind of allow there to be several umbrellas, you know, and you could do like a Venn diagram, and there's probably people who are both highly sensitive and empathic. So for me, a highly sensitive person is really about what's happening on the physical realm. You know, there's bright lights, there's loud sounds, there's a physical component to what they're sensitive to. And yes, they can pick up the subtleties of a room. You know, they can feel the tension, they can look at people's body language. And, you know, part of the highly sensitive label, I'm sure, was created as a way for being observant, as a way of a survival mechanism that, you know, if you scan the room, maybe you're not they're not going to be the first one to leap up and be action oriented, but they're going to sit back. They're going to read the room. They're going to kind of assess, you know, the dynamics. And this is, you know, yes, it's intuitive, but it's also dependent on their keen observational skills. An empathic person can come into a room and there could be no visual clue. There could be no one there, but yet they feel the tension. They can feel that maybe something emotionally happened in the room. And that is them picking up energetically what is in the room. So this is kind of where I like people to kind of assess for themselves, are you someone who's relying on visual clues or physical stimuli that is making you highly sensitive and affecting your nervous system? Or are you someone who is intuitively, energetically picking up information? And how is that impacting your sense of safety, your sense of self, your own nervous system, you know? So does that help?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, I have a couple more questions. So the people that I work with who have had emotionally abusive childhoods, I generally find that one of the difficulties that they have as adults, there are many difficulties, but one of them is that they are sensitive to the energy around them. They are sensitive to picking up things from other people. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they know how to deal, to work with that, or, you know, that it's a gift, but that being a child in an environment that was so emotionally unpredictable
right.
causes them to almost have to become sensitive to the feeling that's around them, to knowing when something is going to erupt before it happens. So would you call that person an empath?
You know, it's part of that, but, you know, what you're describing is, you know, a survival mechanism that they have learned from being exposed to environments where there was unpredictability. And mm-hmm. so, you know, they are hardwired now because, you know, they need to be on alert. They have to take care of themselves. You know, no one else is. So, you know, there starts to create these survival mechanisms. And it's partly taking in the emotional body because that's where the abuse was experienced. But it's also taking in part of the mental body, the mental subtle body, because the mind is very powerful and it wants to ensure safety. So, you know, when you suspect that, you know, if you're able to read energy, if you're also starting to become more intuitive, because I think people who have had hard childhoods, you know, they learn skills of people reading. And they also, you know, if they come inward and start to do the healing work that you, you know, you provide and other people, one of the, you know, the benefits of doing that is you get to know yourself and you get to know what makes you uncomfortable, or you notice when you're uncomfortable. A lot of people become so numb that they don't even register what they're feeling and they are just knee-jerk reacting. So, you know, having that ability to go inward and to take a pause and say, what am I feeling? Why am I feeling this? Where am I feeling it in my body? When have I felt this before? You know, and use it as an investigative way of discovering where energy is holding. And so I think, you know, doing inner work provides you a pathway into becoming more intuitive. And, you know, people can be intuitive without having to be empathic, but empathic sensitivity is also part of the intuitive channels. So, you know, the intuitive, emotional, intuitive person is going to be feeling with their subtle body. Almost, I could say it's like we're an octopus and we have tentacles as well energetically, but, you know, we don't see that with our physical eyes, but your subtle emotional body, your subtle mental body, this is kind of what's feeling out in the room and providing you with information. And, you know, that's why I come to say that, you know, empathic sensitivities, all it is doing is giving you information in which you must process. And so can you stay neutral and receive that information and then respond to it rather than react? And usually when we have unprocessed emotional trauma, you know, we're more into a reactive posture. And so as you build resilience, as you build a sense of knowing about yourself and your sensitivities, you start to get comfortable in your body enough to say, you know, I'm going to just sit with this a little bit. I'm going to investigate this and, you know, look for a response rather than a reaction, because a reaction tends to build barriers where a response builds boundaries. And so for me, you know, this is also the invitation of letting your sensitivities guide you, whether you're empathic or not. So, yeah, I hope that answered some of your questions.
Yeah, I mean,
there.
there's a bit of a gray area there. There's a bit of a there's a bit of a crossover. Yeah. So yes, it did. Thank you. And you just you mentioned about the body being a messenger, and I'm looking at this part of your book where you talk about the body as a messenger. And you bring in your reaction to your religious experiences and how uncomfortable that was for you. And that resonated with me because that's exactly how I felt. it clashed with what I believed, and it was very difficult for me to sit there and sort of try to be part of something that didn't resonate with me. So I see that kind of was your situation. Am I explaining that correctly?
Yes. I had a very visceral, physical, body experience when I, as a young child, I was brought into churches, and I just kind of wanted to flee. It was like this wasn't for me. So it's, but at the same time, I do respect and honor a lot of the spiritual teachings and the spiritual masters that, have come into humanity to help us evolve, to live from our hearts.
Right. But you say empathic sensitivities have no religious affiliation.
Yes, I agree with that statement that I've made. And
okay.
I say this because, I can explain a bit from the book. I gave an example that, a physical empath is having a relationship with the body is having a relationship to the environment. And so its language, its vocabulary is going to be how it feels. It's what is the environment making the body feel. And so as an empath who can pick up energetic messages that are coming, in and around me, I was driving, this is just one example, but I was driving on a busy Houston highway. It's one of the beltways that go around Houston. I was driving into to work, and I was hit with a sudden hit of adrenaline into my chest, and it was so severe. I thought, oh my God, I'm having a heart attack or what? And I began deep breathing, and as I was kind of collecting myself, every car around me had to slam on their brakes because of an accident up ahead. So
oh, wow.
I had felt the adrenaline rush, a group adrenaline rush that was created from this epic center. Hit me before the action was required. And so this is something, you're picking up. And initially I thought, is this something with me? Am I having a heart attack? But then when the brakes hit, the adrenaline kicked in. It was, it was a biological message that adrenaline is usually there to show you action is required urgently. It's not emotional. It's action is needed urgently. And, so as we all sit there in our cars kind of collecting ourselves and happy that no one rear-ended everyone else around them, I started to pick through what did the sensation feels like, because this is what, as a physical empath, I have a working glossary. It gives me an understanding if I felt something before, what it was related to. If I feel it in the future, it kind of helps me build a bigger and better understanding of it. So I kind of do this like if you were tasting food and you want to pick out what are the ingredients, what herbs are used. And so I do that with any physical or emotional sensation. I pick up, I kind of create this working glossary, because it then helps me navigate and move through my life with greater ease, because I'm not like dumbfounded every time something happens.
Right.
Like, oh, that's that. Yeah. So, and when I had this experience, it was the clearest way I could explain to people who, felt it was a religious gift, that, actually when you feel something, there is no religious overtones attached to it, unless, of course, that is what you're intuitively picking up about a situation and doing a reading of sorts. But on the human level of humanity, we all have feelings of love, rejection, pain, suffering, hope. All of these are not copyrighted by any religion. This is part of the spectrum and broadband of our emotional and spiritual selves, that we all share.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you had never had that sensation before, or you just never sort of like put it in your glossary?
Well, I had had, as a child, I had a shot of adrenaline for a severe asthma attack. So I knew what adrenaline felt like as a therapist measure. So I did understand like the chest feeling and that, but in that moment, in relationship to the accident ahead of me, you know, I was registering a group adrenaline of all of us having this kind of need to react soon. And so then now that I know that this is what it feels like, sometimes when I pick up people's anxiety, it has a little bit of similar feel. You know, there's always this kind of heart racing, chest feeling heavy. And so mm-hmm. when I feel that, I'm instantly going, you know, is this my anxiety? I'm not a very anxious person. So when I feel it, it's very uncomfortable because I'm not used to it. And so it's usually a signal that somebody around me is anxious or having an anxiety attack.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I could relate to that. I feel that. I pick that up very easily, very easily.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for people who do, it's really important if they're also anxious that it will almost feel like it's amplified then. So this is another reason why it's very important to know who you are and what is yours. So if you are picking up anxiety around you, you know, don't overly identify with it. If it's yours, then yes, okay, this is mine. This is why I'm anxious. I'm nervous about this. But if you're picking it up from around you, you know, don't pick it up. In other words, receive the information. Oh yes, somebody's anxious around me. And what I say is there's many things you can do to alleviate this message that you're receiving, because I say, you know, empathic people have kind of a message board. These messages from the environment kind of come in and are held there until you acknowledge it in a way. And if you don't acknowledge it and you just accept it as yours, then, you know, it kind of comes in and it can bog down your energy fields. And because, you know, it's really hard to process other people's stuff, you know, but what we can do is we can offer compassion and we can offer goodwill and we can witness it. And I like to say, you know, there's a difference between being an observer and being a witness. And it's really fine to observe. You know, there's sayings out there like observe and don't absorb, or of something of that nature. And that's true. It's a very good practice to know when just observing something. And that means, oh, somebody's sad, or oh, somebody's anxious, or oh, somebody has a bad back. And just passively receive that information and say, no, this is not mine. But I send them goodwill and good wishes. But even that is a bit of a witness, because, you know, if you were a witness at a wedding, you're required to sign your name. If you're a witness at a crime scene, you know, you're asked to give details. So you have to participate in some way. And when you become an empath, I said, you know, it's really truly a service. So you're more witnessing than observing, in the sense that you can ask, is this mine? Is it mine to do more with? You know, should I engage the energy, kind of feel what would balance it out, intend that for the person who it originated from? You know, so you can see how the more you go into the empath role and the role of service, you know, you really need to know what is yours and what is not yours, or you would become easily overwhelmed or burnt out thinking that you had to fix everything, which you don't. You only need to attend to yourself and knowing what, you know, what gives you balance and what is genuinely part of your nature. You know, because there are people who are very drawn to the animal kingdom who are empathic, and there's people who are really drawn to nature. So again, I'm all about, you know who you are. Where do you naturally gravitate to? You know, what is your social justice thing? Because, you know, most empathic people do feel very deeply, and it is, you know, challenging to live in a world where there are so many imbalances. So the way to check in to not over, like, commit yourself to trying to fix everything is to really just gauge where are your natural passions and interests lie, and, you know, examine that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That explains a lot. So how do we, you know, it could be difficult when you're just beginning to learn this, when you're recognizing this and just beginning to learn this, to discern what is yours and what is someone else's. And you were saying basically ask, you know, is this mine or is this someone else's? But in the beginning, when you're just trying to figure this out, that's not always so easy. Is there an easier way to be able to do that, to be able to tell what's yours and what's not?
Well, the truest and I think most comprehensive way is to start doing your own work, because, you know, for you to understand your life experiences and to put it into perspective, you know, that affords you a lot of authority. You know, when you displace your authority into others or into other people's belief systems and you judge yourself by that, that really complicates the communication channel with yourself. And so I always say you have to come back to yourself. You have to, you know, as kind of cliche as it is about the oxygen mask, you know, that you need to put on yourself in an airplane situation before you help anyone else, it truly is what is going to help you understand what is yours and what is somebody else's. And I would say for myself, I kind of started to do this myself, my own inner work, when I was probably in my late 20s, early 30s, and it was when I had children and I realized, you know, I started to comprehend generational programming and how if you don't deal with your own imbalances or dysfunction from your own childhood, you know, it very easily gets passed on to the next generation. And I felt a lot of responsibility to trying to clean up my issues so that my children didn't have to be the next generation to deal with it. And yes, you know, I do my bit and maybe I don't clean it all up because, you know, it's a complicated thing, because, you know, they have their father's genetics as well. But, you know, if I can take responsibility for my stuff, that is how, that's also an act of service for generations to come. And so it's about self-awareness. It's about self-empowerment. It's about authenticity. And so also I want to say, too, when somebody is empathic and they are overwhelmed by the environment and you declare, okay, you know what, I need to look at myself. I need to do my own inner work. I do not, it's not that I don't honor my sensitivities or my nature, but to help myself out, I really need to go within and honor my life experiences and what it has taught me and how it has, you know, whatever revelations. And remarkably, the environment will calm down because it understands that an authority, you have taken authority over your own energy and you're not just giving it out to everybody nilly-willy. And so there is this beautiful, poignant symbiotic relationship that you have with the environment when you become more self-aware and when you articulate, you know, I need space, I need to go in, I need everything around me to calm down. And it typically does.
Are there environments, and I'll be a little more specific, are there environments where it's just so overwhelming for someone who has empathic sensitivity? Like, for instance, the one that comes to mind for me is antique stores and consignment shops. So,
okay, totally.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, right. So I can go in there feeling, okay, I'm all energetic and feeling great. Oh, I can't wait to walk around and look at this stuff. And I come out and I'm like a wrung out rag. I'm so drained. And everything like that. And no matter what tools I use to protect myself, they don't seem to work. So you're relating to this. So are there environments that can really, truly overwhelm us?
Yes, there are. I mean, I totally get what you're saying. I used to live in Houston, kind of North Houston, and there was Old Town Spring is what it was called. And it had a lot of kind of old antique-y stuff. And I could not go in there. I mean, this was earlier on when I wasn't completely, I would say, an empath, but I was very aware of the energetic world. I felt intimidated, you know. So your confidence also about how to handle environments offers resiliency, you know, like when you start to say, okay, this is just information. But the thing about like antique stores, I find it's so stagnant that the energy wants to pull you down. Because one of the services I offer are property clearings and, you know, clearing something of an imprint, you know, kind of giving it a clean slate. This is what they don't do at antique stores, you know, unless you have an energy aware person. So you just have a collection of just really dense energy and not even really quite a message. It's just all denseness. I also advise my own kids who, you know, have their own views on the world. But if they go to a thrift shop, if they go to a vintage store and they're buying, because it's really popular to go, you know, to resources, you know, buy used, don't, you know, buy new. And so they'll shop a lot at thrift stores. And I'm like, you know, you'll probably want to energetically clear that before you start wearing it. because thrift shops do the same thing to me. It's just a lot of denseness.
Well, that explains a lot. So
yeah.
It would be wise for the owners of these stores to do clearings. At least save the environment from time to time.
Yeah, but you know, that could be a whole new service provided for people, you know, you know, because also clearing stuff, you know, clearing a property, you know, it can help move the energy into a new expression and it can harmonize the intention of the owner, you know, so it's very holistic. And it's a blessing. I say, you know, I feel energy of words and like, so blessing for me energetically means you're putting something into service and it lifts it up into that. So like I advise people to bless their journals because it takes it out of this kind of monologue ranting or just a repetitive pattern of saying the same thing. And if you bless it with the intention that it serves you to gain insight and self-awareness, it becomes more of a dialogue with you and, you know, a potential higher source of intelligence or creativity or a muse even.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Are there some people that just, their energy is just so in conflict with our own that it makes us not be able to be around those people?
Yeah, and this is also a choice because, you know, when you have your own authority, you get to choose who you want around you, right? This is part of, you know, you taking responsibility for yourself and your energy. And, you know, I've done a lot of different studies, different places. And one was when we lived in Australia, I studied at the Melanie Ryan Institute of Applied Consciousness, you know, very brilliant woman, very just wise, and she has a lot of different ways of explaining things. And, you know, because we are in a, you know, there is a bit of duality here, and you have the choice whether you want to play in the fields of duality or if you want to be centered in non-duality and be living from your heart, which is kind of a neutral channel, your neutral channel. Kind of allows yourself to be non-judgmental. You can accept that there are life experiences that, you know, maybe weren't pleasant, but nonetheless they were yours and it formed you in some way, and you offer compassion. And so, but one of the ways that she would help people in the situation you've just described about people that you really just, you know, your energy is just at odds with, it's usually because there's something in their energy that is doesn't resonate with you, that, you know, just, you know, it's not a good fit. And when you see people who have behaviors that are in conflict with, you know, your morality or your consciousness, you know, it's rather than judging them, you can just simply say, I am not that. And this ability to say I am and I am not allows it to kind of reinforce to your own energy and your own consciousness what you know to be true for you. And so the more you can, you know, so say you see an example of somebody who was incredibly inspirational, down to earth, you know, they kind of had a magnetic presence, you know, you just felt like they were, you know, a decent person. And you like the way you felt around them, you know, by seeing them and their energy and saying, I am that, is telling your energy system, again, you know, not that we're computers and we're programming ourselves, but in a way, your mind is like that, you know. So you reinforcing to your mind that I am that, and that is kind of what you're wanting to embody for yourself. And likewise, when you see behavior, you know, or dysfunction that you know would undermine your own authority and wobble you, you simply say, I am not that.
I am not that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's telling your mind, that's giving your subconscious mind, because your subconscious mind, you know, is long-term memory. And so you're trying to get out of these old habits and patterns. And so by you taking control of your mind, of you taking control of your authority and helping your mind understand who you are, who you know yourself to be, knowing your own greatness and not compromising on that, you know, this is kind of how you can go through relationships and discern, like, okay, this person has, you know, too many I am not. And so why would I want to be with them? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Do you feel that? It's a very energetic thing. Can you, like, imagine for yourself in an environment that, you know, you give yourself kind of these boundaries? Yeah.
Right, saying I am or I am not. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's going to work right away.
No.
It could be a conditioning.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and it's an awareness. It shows that you're present in the moment and you're self-aware.
Yes. That's something that I've never done. I'm really happy to hear that, and it's so easy to put that into action. In my life specifically.
Yeah, and you know what? It also clears up any energetic tendencies of projecting on people, because, you know, when you project on somebody, you know, they're kind of like spitballs energetically that you're sending out, and, you know, that kind of almost binds you to that person through your judgment. And so this is a more compassionate way that, you know, you're just understanding that their behavior is not what you want to be part of, and or their consciousness. And so it allows you to just say, rather than say you're a horrible person or you're this or that, it's just simply, I am not that. And it's
okay.
A declaration of who you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. In your book, you talk about the 3, 4, and 5 dimensional planes and physical planes. And I have heard numerous times that we are in and out now of the fifth dimension, and some of us feel it more than others do. Is this something that we're going to feel more? A person who's an empath is going to be able to feel the difference in those planes? Are we that sensitive?
Yes, I believe so, especially, you know, if you are embodied in yourself and your lower chakras are functioning without a lot of distortion or, you know, stagnation. And, you know, for myself, you would hear people talk about the fifth dimension in many different ways. And I needed for myself to understand this. And the way that I, through meditation and, you know, working with energy, what I found the easiest way to understand this as a personal thing that each and every one of us can do is, you know, when you go up the chakras, so I talk about first dimension as, like, you know, the physical plane. It's very, there's not a lot to it. It's very non-dimensional. It's just flat. And then you come into the second chakra, which is your emotional body. So, you know, you are working on that, and, you know, that's also part of empathy. And gaining empathy for someone, you know, helps a connection. It helps connect humanity. It's expansive. But a lot of people, they can have empathy only based on their life experiences. So this is where you get a politician who actually has to borrow a constituent's story to create an emotional connection to, you know, the people on their who would vote for them. And, you know, they have to borrow someone else's story because they don't have that personal experience. And so it would lack the emotional content. So this is where real life really comes in to give depth and enrichment, is your own emotional connection to your life. And so when you go out of not needing your own life experiences and you go into more universal empathy, that's a bit more from the heart chakra. And that's where you can see, you know, suffering or someone's pain, you know, regardless of whether you experience what they experience, you can see as a human to human connection that, you know, there may be injustice or there may be, you know, tragedy and whatnot. And so then you go to your third chakra, which is, you know, your mental body. And your mental body, you know, all your subtle bodies work together. They create a holistic consciousness. But sometimes people who don't want to feel because they've had really toxic environments or they're overwhelmed and they numb themselves out in certain ways, they start to rely more and more on their mental body. And this is where judgment comes in, because it's easier to judge something than to feel something. And so part of the untangling, as you get up into the, you know, the mental, emotional, and physical, you're at a third dimensional. You know, this is a human body walking around, eating, drinking, sleeping. But when you go up to the heart chakra, which is the fourth dimension, and the spiritual body, that is where you kind of start bringing in more expansive thoughts and perceptions based on connectivity, about oneness, you know. And so when you get to the spiritual, the spiritual subtle body is in the fourth dimension. When you get to the fifth, it's kind of a point of singularity is what I want to say. And that is where all of those subtle bodies, you know, come together and they function as one rather than independently. They are, you know, superfluidity. They come together and it becomes one point of singularity in which you understand that everything around you and within you is connected to oneness. And so, you know, beyond that, you know, I've experienced that maybe once or twice in my life, this total immersion into nothingness, but also oneness and stillness. And it's, you know, just profound, and it's even hard to articulate. But yes, I think if you're sensitive, you will know that, you know, there's places in this world where it really supports or has this energy about it. I personally feel this often when I'm in nature, because, you know, nature knows itself. It's authentic. It doesn't have an agenda. And so when you're in that environment of that knowingness, and today I believe is Earth Day, so let's honor, you know, that nature is the most authentic presence we have before us, and, you know, appreciate and give gratitude, and also, you know that you too are perfect. And I kind of went on a ramble there, but I hope
So really, it's when we're in our zone, you know, when you're in that zone where you just feel at peace, at one with everything. And that's what the fifth dimension is, feels like. So, are we in and out of that at times, or how do you see that?
Oh yeah. I see that, we're in a world, you know, we're in a body, we're in a life, we're in relationships, And some will be more taxing than others, and that's only to kind of show where we might still have, you know, perceptions or energy that need to be addressed. But you can only, you know, I did a lot of outward bound stuff when I was younger, and, you know, they use a quote from Tennyson, but it basically comes down to, you know, you can only go as fast as the weakest link. So within, you know, we're multidimensional. I mean, you know, we've got we have a system that is influencing different things, our mental, our emotional, you know, our psyche is composed of different things. Our mind, you know, has all these different, you know, subconscious mind, the, you know, unconscious mind. You know, there is so much going on as a processing component of our life. And there's going to be times where, you know, your emotional body gets triggered. And when it gets triggered, it's like, okay, there's still something here I need to look at. And so everything kind of slows down and allows the emotional body a chance to clear out, clean out, you know, kind of get regenerated into a newer expression of health and wellness. And, you know, so you have to allow that, you know, just like a car needs maintenance, you know, you're going to be going through life, and the more you clear, the more capacity you have, you know, to have compassion, to care about others, to care about yourself, to have self-love, because self-love is the Teflon, really. I mean, if anyone projected on you and you have self-love, you know, you really don't care what they think, and it would just fall off. It wouldn't. But if you have negative thoughts about yourself and someone similarly projects upon you around this subject, you know, it's like Velcro. It just kind of, you know, complicates your relationship with yourself. And that's, for me, as a spiritual counselor, you know, the trespassing is when you project upon someone else, because you're basically undermining their own authority and trying to tell them who they are. Mm-hmm. And so this is, you know, my public service announcement is, the more you can be self-conscious about your thoughts and limiting how you project onto others and yourself, you know, like doing a property clearing, most times you have to clear a ton off the mirrors, because people look at themselves and they instantly start going to, you know, oh, I wish that was different. Or, you know, that's where a lot of self-loathing happens, is in front of mirrors.
Wow.
So we could all really stand to clear our mirrors.
Yes. Yeah.
In every situation. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and I say in the book, as an empath, you know, I used to feel that if everyone just attended to their own stuff, the environments would be less cluttered with pollution. And I also say, you know, the problem or the challenges that are facing empathic people is we get a double whammy, in that we see litter and pollution on the physical realm, and we see the toxic relationship. So we're dealing with it physically, you know, on the physical plane. But then we also feel it energetically, the projections, the, you know, the negative thought forms. So, you know, this is why self-care is really important for an empathic, sensitive person, because, you know, you're getting hit on both realms, with kind of this toxicity. And so having in place a way that you can always come back to yourself, do body work, whether that's a massage or yoga or, you know, any sort of movement that can help your subtle bodies circulate. And I also say that, you know, your emotional subtle body, its key house is being able to be playful and creative and, you know, really allow it to find a way to express itself, you know, so.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you. Wow. That was powerful. Very powerful.
Yeah.
Oh, so we're at the end of the hour. So your book, The Space in Between, An Empath's Field Guide. And do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's www.smhovam, my last name, .com. And also, if you went to www.empathfieldguide.com, it will take you to the book portion of my website. And I'd like to say that right now I have a an online empath quiz that I tried to, you know, really address what I was critical about on other online empath quizzes where, you know, you basically, you know, ticked off boxes and it gave you the label, but not really describing what that meant. So mine is made to be kind of situational, and it help, you know, it gives scenarios so that people can kind of really think, okay, how would I respond or react to the situation? And then it's followed up with an email that really kind of goes into detail where they may be on the spectrum from being empathic to an empath or a highly sensitive person.
Thank you. That really will help clear it up for a lot of people who are listening, because there are, you know, fine lines between all of them. And like you said, it's kind of like a Venn diagram. There is a crossover. So that really helps us to understand. I think it's understanding who we are is really the basis for living in our skin in a comfortable way, living in our mind in a comfortable way. And you pointed out self-love. I mean, that is the root of all healing and all, you know, spiritual work, physical work, emotional work. We've got to love ourselves first, which is so confusing for people who have been told that it's selfish to do so.
Well, right. And also, if you've been modeled what is presumably supposed to be love by authority figures that didn't know it themselves, you know, this is how generational programming gets passed down. So, you know, it's the idea that, you know, looking at what is, you know, pure love and acceptance and, there's a lot there. I want to say that the quote I used in my book that I start my book out with is by a Greek ancient poet, Pindar, and the quote is, "Know who you are and be such." And that has really been my kind of life quote, that, you know, knowing who you are and then be such, you know, take out the disparity, take out the theoretical, you know, go, can you apply it, you know? Can you live your life authentically from that?
That is so crucial. It's so crucial. I mean, that's many of the clients that I work with, we do that, because when you come out of an abusive relationship, especially like in adulthood, not necessarily, it could be from your childhood too, but you've been prevented from being who you are. There's been a stopgap put in there so that you become just a copy or just a puppet of your abuser. So it's hard for people. And the first time I ask people, who are you? really, really scary for them.
No, exactly. But, you know, I think, you know, having people like yourself, and, you know, it seems to be building more and more in society about the idea of learning how to regulate your nervous system and identifying, well, how did you get hardwired through, you know, through your experiences to be reactionary? And, you know, this is what you need to do, is provide the space for people to start asking, well, who am I truly? You know, yes, I have a story. Yes, I've had experiences, and in some ways they've defined me, but that doesn't necessarily have to mean it limits you.
Yes, so true. Thank you, Signe, for being with me today. This has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I have too. I am so pleased to have been here, and I hope your listeners likewise feel supported by what we discussed.
I think they do. You know, your point of view is different than what has, you know, others have presented, or what I may have even presented. So thank you for clearing that up. It's really, really important to hear your viewpoint on this. So thank you, and have a wonderful day. Take care.
Yeah, you too. All right. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you. Bye. So we are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's show. Visit randifine.com, RANDIFINE.com, and be sure to sign up to receive updates on the latest blog posts, events, and upcoming shows. Thank you for listening.